weekend. The biggest game, though, arguably, was Portugal against Sweden. We'll talk about that a little later on, because joining us now to talk about the second biggest and actually what was surely the biggest upset of the weekend and a big disappointment for any Ligue 1 fans out there and French football fans out there was, of course, the Ukraine against France in Kiev. France losing 2-0, and a man who's here to talk to us about all things French football, and a man who we always enjoy talking about all things French football, is a man who we enjoy and having back on the WFD airwaves today. It's Mr. Ian Holyman joining us here today. Ian, it's a pleasure to have you back on World Football Daily. How are you doing today, mate?
Hi, Ollie. I'm pleased to be back as well.
Fantastic to hear your voice, and we look forward to hearing your voice later on this week as well, as you're heading off for a little bit of France against Ukraine coming up this week. Is it all lost for them already? France started to buckle so early before even getting to a tournament.
I think they are still in it. You have to say that they were very lucky not to come away from Ukraine with an even heavier defeat. I think 3-0, which was probably what Ukraine probably deserved. It was such a fine performance from them, not just in terms of commitment, but they just outplayed France at times as well as outfought them. If it had been 3-0, I wouldn't have given them a hope at all. But you can't discount the quality in the French side. I think Ribéry was dealt with particularly well in the first leg. Are they going to be able to do that again? The Ukrainians, it required a lot of effort. There's still a sniff of a chance in there for France, but they have to play so much better than they did in that first leg.
It was something we asked a lot during the season last year, of how do you shut down Ribéry? Of course, at Bayern Munich, it's even more difficult with the amount of weapons that they had. You said Ukraine were able to do it. How did they find that knack to close off a guy who is expected to win or at least be in that top three for the Ballon d'Or this year?
Yeah, well, I think what happened was that Ribéry was at least double-teamed every single time he got the ball. You have to say Ukraine put in a huge amount of physical effort. How much will they have recovered come tomorrow evening? That's a question which remains to be seen. They really did give everything, and they were snapping at the heels of not only Ribéry, but everybody else as well, Nasri included. I think that perhaps Didier Deschamps will undoubtedly change his side. I think he made a big mistake in the first leg, actually, by picking Nasri ahead of Mathieu Valbuena. Now, I know Mathieu Valbuena has not been in the best of form of late, and by his own admission with Olympique Marseille, but he just makes things happen. Every single time he gets on the ball, he's trying to look forward, he's trying to make things happen. He's, for me, a much more positive player than Nasri. Remy offered absolutely nothing in that first leg, I thought. Perhaps Nasri put out on the right-hand side, Valbuena through the middle. And then Ukraine have got a little bit more of a problem, because Ribéry, yes, you can double-team up on him, but then you've got Valbuena in the middle. And as I said, he does have this happy knack of just making things happen for France. He's scored goals recently for them. He's made assists. Then it's going to be a different sort of question that the Ukraine are going to be asked. If I was Deschamps, I'd be certainly doing that. Although he still has problems elsewhere in defence that he needs to try and solve. But for me, perhaps not so much Ribéry, although he is important, but actually Valbuena, I think, holds the key to whether France can actually come back into this.
A number of people have criticised the performance of Sami Nasri from that first leg. You said that you would rather see Valbuena in there, but do you think it's right that some people putting a lot of the blame on Nasri's shoulders for his performance? Do you think that's a fair reflection?
I don't know whether I don't think you can say it's entirely his fault. I mean, the thing is that Deschamps put him there, and I think that he probably shouldn't have been there. I can't really understand why Deschamps, a vastly experienced coach as well as a player at the very highest level, puts in a guy who, fair enough, he played pretty well in a friendly against Australia, and then a rather meaningless qualifier, the final qualifier against Finland, and suddenly he's back first choice ahead of a guy, Valbuena, who's played brilliantly for France for the last 2 years and has had just a little bit of a dip in form prior to this playoff. For me, it's absolutely baffling. I can only assume that Valbuena, given the way that his career has gone, he was rejected as a youngster by Bordeaux. He was rejected initially by Deschamps at Marseille, believe it or not. That sort of spirit is going to come through again, and he's going to be determined to really prove Deschamps wrong. Perhaps it was a stroke of a psychological genius, a la Mourinho, by Deschamps. I don't think it was. But as you mentioned, I don't think it was entirely fair to blame Nasri completely, because I think pretty much everybody played below par in that game.
There'll be a fair bit of blame put on the shoulders of Laurent Koscielny, I'm sure. A late red card, but A number of people highlighting the number of bookings and red cards that Koscielny gets at both club and country level. Is it fair to argue that people calling him a liability now in a back line?
No, I don't think that's right at all. I think, as I said to you before, Ukraine really got in the faces, and not only in the faces, you have to say, of the French team. Olivier Giroud, who seems to be one of the most affable gentlemen in football, even he was getting riled a number of times. He complained that there were elbows in his face, and you've got to reach a pretty high to manage to get your arms in Olivier Giroud's face. So they really were very, very physical, Ukraine. But that's the way sometimes football is played. And for me, France didn't meet that physical challenge. They were rather intimidated by Ukraine. For me, believe it or not. Koscielny, yeah, he just saw red. It was a very stupid thing to do. Deschamps was clearly frustrated with him, as well as with the side's overall performance. But Koscielny has been one of the best performers for France at the back in the last couple of years since Deschamps took over. So, no, I think at times that can happen to anybody. It's just that perhaps he really needed to try and keep a lid on things, particularly with France already struggling. And now it leaves Deschamps with a real problem at centre-back, because Abidal's not playing well. He didn't play well the other evening. Varane has had a knee injury that kept him out of the first leg, but looks like Varane may be fit, but how fit is he? And then Mamadou Sakho is going to come in, and those two, with Varane, and those two have only played together a couple of times. I think about something like 120 minutes together at international level. That is hardly the sort of preparation, despite all their talent, that you need for such an important game.
Is holding the centre of that pitch going to be, especially in that back line, going to be one of the biggest tasks for France? Because are we likely to see Ukraine sitting back, trying to soak up pressure and hitting on the break with Konoplyanka, Yarmolenko and possibly Roman Zoyula as that front man again, and try and hitting on the counter?
Well, they have said through Anatoly Timoshuk that they're going to just play the same way as they did in Kiev. The way that it worked there, I don't see why you would change things. It was absolutely superb. There's no doubt that they really do pose a counter-attacking threat to France, and France do clearly have to try and up their game from Friday. The pace of Yarmolenko and Konoplyanka down the flanks was a real problem for France. You talked about people blaming Nasri. I mean, I thought Evra had a pretty poor game, although that may have been due to the form of Yarmolenko. But if I were Ukraine, I wouldn't change a thing. They were absolutely superb in that first leg. It's really up to France to change things. It's interesting that a few things have been filtering out today from the French camp. Reportedly, the French FA president went to see them yesterday and told them that they're simply pretending to get along well. Now, there has been there's been a lot of controversy in the past, the 2010 World Cup strike, of course, the friction that there was between Laurent Blanc and a number of players at Euro 2012. It's all been rather nice and quiet and peaceful in the build-up to these games. Everybody saying that we're getting on well, etc., etc. It's interesting to hear that the French FA president thinks that they're all just pretending, and perhaps the way that they played on Friday evening, that they really didn't give their all for each other, never mind for their shirt or for their country, suggests that perhaps he's right. Can Deschamps turn something like that around and such a short space of time? That remains to be seen.
How do they stop this sort of thing, though, Ian? I mean, as you say, just said, it's a problem that runs through this French squad almost since the years of their success at international level. Is there any way? Is it just a cultural thing? Is it just they have a group of players that just don't get on? Is there any way to solve it, do you think?
I'm not sure there is. It's a very difficult question. And if you look at French society, the backgrounds of these guys, very very disparate backgrounds at times. But as you said, even in their glory days, though, you know, Emmanuel Petit is pretty much persona non grata with a lot of the French 98 World Cup winning side because of things that he wrote in his autobiography. I don't think he was always flavour of the month, but they managed to pull together and win things. Obviously, they managed to put their egos sort of to one side. It seems that this French side can't. You look at the way Samir Nasri behaved in Euro 2012 with his relations with the media, who admittedly are not always the most clement towards this French side. But you know, they're complaining that the media are out to get them, etc. They really have to look at themselves and the way that they carry on. And if you look at this French squad on paper, you have to say that they are genuine World Cup contenders. You look at the individuals that they have right throughout, from the defence, the midfield, the up front. They have got a fantastic squad. They've got a great goalkeeper. They've got every single possible ingredient to be real challengers in Brazil. And yet here we are, finding them almost pretty much on the brink of elimination against a squad, again, which you look at on paper, you think there's absolutely no match between these two. France should win this comfortably. And yet they're 2-0 down from the first leg. And it's very difficult to see how they're going to come round. I can't see if Didier Deschamps, an icon of the game in France, if he can't get these guys to understand that they have to play together, I'm not sure who can. Perhaps Zidane, maybe, but he's got no coaching experience whatsoever.
And he's being groomed as well, it seems, for the Real Madrid job at some point in the future. Maybe Paolo Di Canio, with his his managerial methods, could come in and give him a kick up the behind or so to organise this France squad. I suppose, Ian, just finally on the France game before we quickly divert elsewhere, does it make it even more frustrating for the French, the fact that there was a point in this World Cup qualification group where Spain could have been there for the taking if results had gone their way, and they could have been finishing up top of this group and actually had a lot of their own destiny in their own hands, and it didn't quite pull out? Does that make it extra frustrating for the French, or did they always accept that they would probably end up finishing behind Spain and have to go through to the World Cup in this method?
Well, the noises that they made when they did finish runners-up was that they always expected to finish runners-up, et cetera, as you would expect. I think probably secretly they did think that they couldn't beat Spain, but they managed to get a draw away rather early on, a late Olivier Giroud goal, if memory serves correctly, against Spain. And that really did get people saying, oh yeah, maybe we can beat Spain. And perhaps actually it was rather a curse in disguise as opposed to a blessing, because they sort of started to believe in their own press, in their own hype a little bit, and sort of took their eye off the ball. They didn't quite have the motivation. They didn't quite realise that they needed to be as motivated in that game as they should have been in every game. Then they lost to Spain here in France, and then that really, you know, sealed their fate. They were never gonna overtake Spain after that, and they've been focused. What's surprising is they've been focused on the playoffs since then, really. And yet they come into Friday's game against Ukraine. I know that the draw wasn't made all that long ago, but they seem to be not really psychologically prepared for the fact that they had something like 180 minutes, possibly more, for a place in the World Cup. It's a point that Didier Deschamps made. He said that the Ukrainians came out and they played a match of high level of competition. He said, you guys, or his players, just played an ordinary game. Not as if there was a World Cup place at stake. And I think that attitude was reflected in their performance. And I think it's quite staggering that with a place in Brazil at stake, they didn't play at least possibly even 50% of their potential. They were so poor on Friday evening.
It'd be interesting to see what happens and the mental attitude that they come out with on Tuesday night, Ian. And I think I speak for everybody when I say that we're all very jealous that you're going to be there covering that game. There were, of course, other European qualifiers. And just very briefly, just to run through a couple of them with you, the Portugal-Sweden game. I don't know if you watched any of this live at all, Ian, but it failed to live up to the hype almost, this Zlatan v Ronaldo battle. But going up back to Sweden, do you think Sweden actually are in a pretty good situation, having conceded just the one in the Estadio de Luz?
I think they are, and it's interesting. A Swedish friend of mine just asked me today, what do you think's going to happen? I answered my rather flippant, what do I know about football? and then suggested that, you know, Zlatan has been in sensational form. He really has. Everybody saw his goals against Anderlecht, but even in Ligue 1, he's been impressive. That lovely backheel goal that he scored against Bastia. Everybody knows that he's absolutely capable of winning that game by himself. I know Portugal have got the stronger side, they've got the stronger individuals. Ronaldo, yes, individually, perhaps he's a match for Zlatan, but I think Zlatan on a big occasion like that, he can pull something out quite extraordinary. We've all seen it before. You know, Sweden, for me, have got to score first. obviously they're going to really struggle if Portugal get on the score sheet first. But I've been inside that Friends Arena in Solna. It's going to be absolutely packed. The atmosphere is going to be magnificent, and Zlatan is going to be so motivated. It's you know, most likely his last chance to play at the World Cup. He's 32. He's going to be so determined, and I quite fancy Sweden to come through that one.
Were you surprised how we didn't see that Zlatan on Friday at all? It didn't look like he was the focus of everything, and didn't seem to have the energy levels that we normally see, especially when PSG are firing on all cylinders. Is it almost like he was saving it for the return leg? Do you think that's something that he may have consciously done, or was that just Zlatan getting lost in what was a difficult game for Sweden away in Portugal?
I think it's probably the latter. I don't think even Zlatan is so self-confident to think that he can afford to allow his team to lose 1-0 away from home and then he'll just do it all. I don't know, maybe he is actually. But I think you know, he knows that this is his last chance. Of course, it's the same for Ronaldo, and he's going to be equally motivated. But for me, Zlatan, you can say all you like about Cristiano Ronaldo, but for me, Zlatan is the better footballer, in the sense that he just does things instinctively. I always get the impression with Ronaldo, as fantastic a player as he is, it's so much more trained, it's so much more thought through. Zlatan can just do something out of nothing, and that can win you games. And I really feel that he's going to come through. And you know, it's the sort of fairy tale that these sort of guys live. I always thought that David Beckham's life was just basically like a fairy tale. Everything went right for him. He wins the trophy. He's the golden boy. And it's the same for Zlatan. He's absolutely adored in Sweden. And this could be his finest moment.
Should he be on the Ballon d'Or top three as well? You say he's in such fine form, and he has for the last 18 months been immense at PSG. Should he be up there for a real candidate to win this thing?
Thanks for asking me all the easy questions.
Sorry.
I mean, what was interesting, I saw Jean-Pierre Papin, a former European Ballon d'Or winner, a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, on French TV, saying that Marco van Basten won one of his golden balls by playing well in just two matches. One of those was in Europe, another one was in Serie A. And he was suddenly voted the Ballon d'Or winner. I know the voting process has changed since then. It was previously only the media. Now it's media and national team coaches and captains. So that sort of skews things a little bit. It's really tough to narrow that four, which I would say Ibrahimovic, Ribery, Messi and Ronaldo, down into three. Personally, though, I would certainly have Ribery and Ibrahimovic in there. But, you know, can you really leave out Messi and Ronaldo? I'm glad it's not me, anyway, who has to make that shortlist choice.
Oh, I don't know. I think it could be very fun to... I think being a voter and winding up either Ronaldo or Zlatan by not putting them on there would be a very dangerous game to play, but also could be a very fun one to play as well, with their reactions to missing out on the top three. We will leave it there for you today, and I will leave you, allow you to get away and back to preparations for Tuesday, I'm sure. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed about all things French football and Ligue 1, my friend.
It's a pleasure, Ollie. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Ian Holyman there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things France against Ukraine as the French look to battle back from that 2-0 loss in Kiev. And Zlatan, should he be? I mean, we've been so kind of focused on Ribery being that third member to join Messi and Ronaldo, but Zlatan has been in such great form. Almost gets PSG past Barca in the Champions League at the first real time of asking. And does, of course, win a league title with Paris Saint-Germain last season, and is hands down the best player in that PSG side and in Ligue 1 at the moment as well. You do wonder if maybe there's a chance for one of either Messi or Ronaldo to not be up at the top of that podium this year for Ballon d'Or awards. Yes, Messi is the best player in the world, but has he been as pivotal and been as the most important and best player for his side compared to the likes of Ribery at Bayern Munich and what he did winning that treble, and what Zlatan's done for PSG both on and off the pitch, and helped to create